This is the G Podcast, where we focus on family, friends, finances, freedom, and our future, and everything else. This is the G Podcast, and today we got a special guest, the owner, the creator, the founder of the whole Impel movement. We got Leon in the building. We getting right to it. Once again, y'all, this is the G Podcast, where we focus on family, friends, finances, freedom, and our future, and everything else. Leon, I greatly appreciate you for joining.
What's going on, G? What's going on?
Yes, indeed. Just a couple items before we get started. This is the first time we also streaming live on Instagram. We streaming live on YouTube at the same time. Shout out to G for having everything going, man. Yeah. If you are watching on Instagram, I encourage you to go ahead, hit the link in the bio. Subscribe on YouTube. Go ahead and join on YouTube. That's where we'll primarily be following up on the comments, but we are over on Instagram as well. Leon, I'm just going to dive like right into the conversation here. I'm rocking some of the gear. You've got it on too as well. Just like what does this mean, Impel Forward?
Impel Forward. The word impel means to drive, force, or urge someone to do something. Simply, I always give people that long version, but it simply means to take action. And I try to inspire people to take action in whatever it is they're trying to do. A lot of people, we all have dreams, goals, and aspirations, but sometimes it's just stuck in our head. We never put it into action. I don't know how to put it into action. I don't know where to start at. So I just use myself to show people that things can get done if we just put it in action, take action.
Word up. No, I think that's dope. And like, I got to go back, because when you talk about putting stuff in action, like we're going to really talk about like your journey as an entrepreneur, which led you to the Impel brand. And I'll just share a quick story in terms of how I first met Leon. Leon has actually been cutting my hair since I actually had hair one. So that's like, you remember them things was spinning back in the day. Leon can attest to that. So Leon been cutting my hair since high school. And the first time I met Leon was at a barbershop in Durham. It was called J&S off of Chapel Hill Road, right there, kind of the intersection of Chapel Hill Road and Cornwallis. Uh-huh. And like, I gotta keep it a stack. You like most barbershops, you was the new dude. And I was like, man, I'm good. I'll wait. Like, just talk to me about what that initial experience was like in Durham, being a new barber. Was that like your first time, like your first, I guess, gig in Durham, if you will? But just what was that like being new to the barbershop at that time, where I felt like I first saw you get started with all of this?
It's funny that you say that, because what's this, 2023?
Yeah.
I had that happen to me in 2020, I think.
Oh, word.
Yeah. So, you know, so the barbershop fluctuates, you know, days different. You know, you might be busy one day, the next day you might not be busy. I'm just sitting down. I ain't had no customer. I've been cutting hair 20 years. It's some days I still might only cut 3 people in one day. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting in there in the barbershop one day. A guy come in there, he needed a haircut. And I'm just sitting there. He said, you cutting? I said, yeah, I'm cutting. I said, you need a haircut? He said, I don't know. You sitting down. He's like, you sitting down. I don't know if you can cut. I said, what's up to you to get in my chair? I'm going to cut your hair if you get in my chair. To this day, he had like, he can't miss an appointment. He come every week.
Every week.
And he get mad if I ain't at work.
Word.
Yeah, but growing up, man, I grew up in a barbershop. So I already knew what it took. I knew what it was going to be like to start my clientele. And even like you say, even then when I was first starting, I had a guy I seen every day at the gym. He knew I was in barber school. He knew when I finished it, but he would still ask me, you getting any better yet? Yeah. And I got tired of him asking me that. So just come and see. Yeah. Eventually it still took him a while to to come sit in my chair. But I knew what it took to grow. So I wasn't never impatient. Some people are, especially if you never grew up in it and you just want it so fast. And I knew what it took. So I was working a full-time job too. Even though I didn't have customers, I would go to work, go to my full-time job, come to the barbershop. Sometimes I'd sleep in the chair. I'd be gone, sleeping. Somebody came. I never got discouraged because, I knew what it took. Sometimes I might get one head. Sometimes I might not get no heads. But I still come to work. I still show up. I still sweep. I still look at the other barber's cut, which I did that all throughout my life. So I knew what it took. So it didn't just discourage me at all.
Word. You grew up in a barbershop. Like, talk to me about that. Like what does that mean? You grew up like in a barbershop setting?
Well, my pops, Mac. My step pops, but I call him my pop, Mac. Everybody know him from the city. I'm from Fayetteville, North Carolina. 2-6.
Shout out to Fayetteville.
Yeah. My step pops, Mac, which is my pop. He raised me. He had a barbershop right outside our neighborhood. And my mother did hair, and he had a barbershop right outside our neighborhood. So he cutting everybody in the neighborhood hair, cutting everybody at the school hair, high school, everybody on the football team, basketball team. So he cutting everybody. So I'm practically in the barbershop seeing things and grew up in there sweeping and whatever. But I really wasn't paying attention then. But I grew up in the barbershop and I knew what it took. And I knew back then he used to try to teach me things, but I was doing whatever, being a kid, being a young boy. I didn't really pay attention to a lot of his teachings, but I was around it all the time.
So you grew up in a household where the male figure was a barber and your mother, the woman figure, was did hair as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she worked in the salon. Oh, my biological father, he also went to barber school too. He was a barber.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Later on that he went to the same barber school I went to, Harris Barber College. Shout out to Harris Barber College in Raleigh.
Word. So shout out to Harris Barber College. And let me make sure I heard that correct. You're saying that you didn't know your father was a barber, or you didn't know y'all went to the same barber school?
I didn't know we went to the same barber school until later on.
Word. Okay. Growing up in Fayetteville, how would you describe that? Like, your experience? Like, is your family from there, or did somebody get there in the military? Like, and what was that just like growing up in Fayetteville?
Growing up fast. No, my mother wasn't in the military. I was originally born in Southern Pines. Pines, North Carolina. I left there. It's right up the street, about 30 minutes from Fayetteville. So we left there when I was about 4 or 5. That's how we got to Fayetteville. I got to Fayetteville. But nobody was in the military.
Word. Yeah. Word.
But it's kind of fast-paced growing up.
Like, fast-paced, what does that mean?
Well, not fast-paced, but you grew up fast. You learn a lot. You learn things pretty fast as far as being in the neighborhood you grew up in and being in the streets. Even just being in school, basically how you can explain it.
Okay. And you growing up in Fayetteville, learning things from the environment, what were some of those early influences that outside of the barbershop you were into in those days growing up? Like, what were some of the things that you remember getting into at that time period?
I always played sports since I was in elementary. Started flag football. Everybody in my neighborhood played sports, from wrestling to baseball to football, basketball. We played my whole neighborhood, man. All of us was athletes. That's what I grew up on the most. Breakdancing, you know, everybody grew up in the 80s, you know, breakdancing, doing the talent shows. Yeah, that's basically what I did growing up a lot. And I started getting in trouble in elementary school a lot too. So,
elementary, like when you say trouble in elementary, like how much trouble can a young male be in elementary school? I started getting in trouble in elementary too. So I'm curious to hear, like, from your point of view, what did that trouble initially look like?
I don't know what it was in school, just being, I sometimes say class clown, but I don't know if I was the class clown. I would just get in trouble sometimes. Like, I know plenty of times I had to be in the hall writing sentences or just going to sit in the hallway, just being a disruptor in class. My very first suspension was probably fourth or fifth grade. A teacher made me mad, and I went outside and got this big piece of glass and tried to put it, you know, adjust it under her tire so when she backed out that it was a fucking So we were about the time a parent walked up and saw me. So she took me to the office. Now I got suspended for 5 days. Mm. So doing stuff like that, man, I got a couple fights. One fight, pushing a boy over in the desk, almost fighting, and just doing crazy stuff. Little things in class, stuff like that.
Like, I'm curious as like an adult today, because I got in random little, I used to do the silliest of things in elementary school where I would get in trouble, where I don't know, like, as an adult, who knows? But I'm curious just from your point of view, like, do you or have any idea as to what made you maybe act out in those early years that in retrospect, like, you're very much conscious of today?
Back then, I didn't know. But I think as I got older, I probably leaned on towards not having my biological father there. I didn't notice. See, when my father left, I was like 4 or 5. And then I didn't put it together till I got older, like, because I used to always, it never bothered me. I'm pretty sure we'll get to this point from what my future led me to.
But yeah, just hey, let it rock. Like, it's gonna go wherever it go. Just let it, okay. Like, don't feel free to just say whatever's on the heart.
But I didn't know that until later on in life. Even I've been to prison, so after I went to prison later on, years down the road, it didn't bother me. I just always just think about him and my sister's aspect, like leaving girls. Me being a boy, I'm wild, I'm doing whatever. So it was no love lost towards my father and my sisters. We all still love them, but just me, with me having girls now, I'm like, how did he do that? How could you do that? But and I think that's probably had something to do with it. You know? But I also had, like I said, I did have my step-pops there, but it wasn't really that discipline that you should have when you're younger. My mother, she did what she can do. But.
No, I can relate to that, man. I definitely can. Like, I do feel like I was very much raised. Of course, like, the house and the home is a crucial factor, but I was raised outside. Like, I was always outside. And from doing silly things like setting the neighborhood thing trash can on fire by accident, and the fire department come, and everybody like, oh, I know it was them kids playing by the trash can, everything like just little things as a kid, you're not really thinking about like ramifications, consequences. You're not thinking about none of that, but you just having fun, shooting the breeze, being curious. Doing all types of stuff. And I felt like just being outside definitely in the long run was beneficial, even though caused a lot of road bumps, say, in the early stages, that if I stayed the course, it might have been a smoother path. But those roadblocks also kind of helped prepare me for the realities of how fragile life is and things that how quickly things can change.
And I grew up in the church, man. So being in church and not really getting the message and not being there for a good reason or learning anything doesn't say much, but I grew up in the church. So I came from a good background. It's just that my grandmother, she often, shout out to my grandmother, Dr. Lydia Jones, but she always talks about how I did used to be in church, but I'm sitting in there just chewing on gum, not listening.
Yeah.
Great family, man. Great loving family. So I had a good background. And I guess just growing up in the neighborhood, your environment, and sometimes it can lead you in another direction.
Yeah.
And we all say, I got homeboys who grew up in the same neighborhood I grew up in. They and never went the route I took.
Right.
So it's all on you, what route you take. Like, even with me to taking the route I took, I didn't, even the homeboys that I hung around, they never told, like people say, what, you're hanging around the wrong crowd. No, they was my friends. I grew up with. We've been in the same neighborhood since we kids. I don't consider that a wrong crowd. I just consider that, you know, you're making bad decisions. You know, not necessarily hanging around the wrong crowd. Hanging around the wrong crowd to me is like you going to get people yawning when you start doing stuff. These are my friends. We grew up together and everything.
I feel you on that. I do feel you on that, because just because folks might do some bad things don't make them bad people. Like, right. I do feel you on that. I got homies that people might judge X, Y, and Z, but I just know at the core they're solid folks. Like that, I know they're solid. So I agree with what you're saying 1,000%. Going back to that time, like, were you cutting heads even at that young age? with, like, were you the plug where, like, Leon got it, like?
No, I cut. I remember cutting me and my homeboy. I think I cut him one time in the house. I don't know if he. No, I don't think he got on my head. No, but I probably messed his head about one time. That was it. It was always clippers around. So that was it. That was really only time.
Word. So you weren't cutting hair at all, like, growing up. Like, mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. Okay.
I'm gonna tell you where I really started really learning and paying attention was when I was in prison.
Mm.
I was in prison. As soon as I got there, I'm finding the barber who's at the prison. Every camp I went to, I'm trying to find out who the barber is. I'm hanging with them, getting tight with them. They're showing me different things, or I'm just sitting there learning. Mm. That's when I really started learning. I already knew, even when I got locked up when I was 15, I was about to turn 16.
Mm.
And even then, like, when I first went off, I already knew what I was going to be doing.
Oh, you got locked up as an, like, an adult, like, with adults.
Well, starting off, I had a dope. So at 15, if you had, like, a serious crime, what they would do is they'd go, I think it's called bound you over or something to a dope, something, whatever they called it. Mm-hmm. But I got charged with a dope.
Wow.
My crime was violent. But I started off at a youth spread in Morganton, North Carolina. It was called High Rise at the time, at 16 floors. It was real tall. They recently tore it down, but I started out there. But I was charged as an adult, so I was sentenced to 30 years at the age of 15.
What? Yeah. Wow! Yeah. I didn't think I ever heard that before.
It was an experience. Just like I said, just hanging out in Fayetteville, man. Just doing whatever, man. I left home. I dropped out of school in the 10th grade. So
why do you think you dropped out,
man? We just won't do whatever. Mm. Just do whatever. I left home. First, I left home. I think I left home first. And then once I dropped out of school, but I can't really remember how it happened, but I left home. I dropped out of school. I know my 10th grade year, I remember I had a history of getting kicked out of school. So my 8th grade year, I got kicked out of school, and I had to go to an alternative school. They sent all the kids who get kicked out of school. I went there for fighting or whatever. And then when you go to the alternative school, they don't really they don't care. As long as you show up, do some work, they go past you. So my 9th grade year, I don't recall why I wanted to go back. I did something and I hit somebody. Principal, nobody knew about it. I actually told on myself. I told the principal what happened, and he was like, "Why you telling me that?" I said, because I want to go back to it was called Massey Hill. Yeah, it was called Massey Hill.
Oh, you know, man.
So he did a little investigation and found out that it happened. So he sent me. I went back. So for the second year in a row, I was kicked out of school.
Was trying to go back.
Yeah, yeah. Like, don't ask me why.
Do you have any clue why? Like, any clue why?
It was kind of a fun, like I said, it was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like a fun school, you know. Mm-hmm. All the bad kids went there. I mean, it wasn't. You didn't have to do a lot of work. You know.
Yeah.
It was just cool. You just having fun. As long as you did your work, they passed you. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have to come home with a whole lot of homework, not knowing too much or nothing. I passed, but my 9th grade year, I actually got kicked out of that school. Me and my homeboy was about to fight. It was actually his problem, but he from my neighborhood, is my homeboy. So we actually went to school dressed to fight that same day. And actually, when we got into the school, so we get in there, hallway, didn't nothing actually happen because everybody knew what was going to happen that day. So it was a bunch of commotion, and teachers broke it up already, but they just kicked us out of school. And I couldn't go to no school in Cumberland County. So I had to go back to Moore County to finish out my 9th grade year there. And then after that, I came home for that summer. After the school was out, I came home for the summer, moved back to Fayetteville that summer. And then I don't know what it was, man. I guess just wanting to hang out more. No, I was the youngest one out of all my friends. So I don't care all my homeboys. I was the youngest one out of all my homeboys. So I had little freedom to do and go to parties and this and that. But they had all the freedom. They'd be out all times of the night doing whatever, go whatever, this and that. And I guess it's just me wanting to hang out more. I already not liking school too much. Well, I ain't gonna say I didn't like school. I just didn't. I just guess I was just having too much fun, I guess. I played football from flag all the way up to my JV year. And even in my 10th grade year when I did drop out, I only could play three games because my first game, I couldn't play because that was the beginning of the school year. I got in trouble. Well, we was about to fight. We was about to do something in school. So I think my mother had to come to go to school or something. I couldn't play the first game. Second game, I couldn't start. Third game, I started. That was my last game. And then that was my JV year, my last game. Yeah, but I got kicked out of school. Yeah, I dropped out of school, and then I was already doing things while I was staying at home, mm-hmm. like hanging in the streets, doing a lot of different things. Eventually, I just dropped out of school and just started doing a lot of other things.
Like, yo, 15 years old, looking at 30 years, like, I'm not, like, 40, 45, like, how long did you end up having to serve that time?
I did 7.5 years. I got when I was like 23, something like that. I think 23.
Word. So if you're comfortable sharing, like what did you get charged with that was a 30-year sentence?
I got charged with attempted murder and armed robbery. Attempted murder. I had two armed robberies and attempted murder.
When you got, arrested for this, did you have to turn yourself in? Did you get caught, like, in a situation?
I actually turned myself in. My family, I was running for a while, a little bit, and my family, they didn't want the police to catch me and mm-hmm. hurt me or whatever. Eventually, I went ahead and turned myself in. I know we're laughing and sitting here thinking about a lot of things that I'm talking about all this stuff, but it was something painful as far as to see the things that I did, and especially hurting my family. That's one of the things I try to talk to young kids about when I do come across them getting in trouble or doing things. When you're out there, you're not know what you're doing, but you don't care at that time. Mm-hmm. And when you're out there doing things, just you're not only hurting yourself, you're hurting your family. And that was one of the biggest things for me when I got locked up. I knew what I was facing, but I didn't even cry because I was scared. I cried because I knew I hurt my mother. Mm-hmm. I'm laying in that because at first I had to go to the detention center because I was still young. And I'm laying in the little, it wasn't no dorm because it's a tent in a little room, still mm-hmm. room. And I'm just thinking, I'm crying like crazy because I wasn't scared. Like I said, I wasn't scared. I just knew I hurt my mother. So she tried so hard to keep me out of trouble. She used to tell me, you out in these streets and this and that, this and that. When you go downtown, I ain't coming to get you out. But as soon as I get down, she the first one. She won the first one there.
You know? Yeah. Yo, black moms will tell their sons this. I swear my mama told me the same thing. Like, don't call me. Like, I won't be there to get you out. Like, but when you get in trouble, they the first ones to help. Like, no question.
All right, my grandmother, they stuck with me all the way through. And that's the thing about it. I mean, my grandmother, she wrote me so much. I can't remember. I know she wrote me a lot. I can't remember that she seen me too much in there, but she wrote me a lot. So they stood by me a lot. But when you're out there, when you're out there in the streets, you ain't trying to hear what nobody's trying to say.
Mm-hmm. And what age were you when you left, like, the youth facility?
16. Once you turn 16, you can go. But so it was
this is like, great. So hold up, man. Hold up. So okay. Like, go ahead.
I know what you're about to say, but so when you leave there, it's different levels to adult spreads. Potent and Morrison at the time was like from it was 18. So 18, once you turn 18, you go to like Polk and Morrison, somewhere like mm-hmm. that. Like that, I think that was like 18 to 20 something, maybe a little older. Can't recall. But then the depends on the seriousness. My crime was serious, but sometimes it just depends on how you are as an inmate or the more seriousness of your crime. If you went to a real adult prison, but really they're all the same. You're still locked up no matter how old you are or where you go. I was talking to a guy before a couple years ago, and we just talking about prison and where we've been and things we did and whatever. And he told me, he said, oh, you was in a young prison. And I'm like, I'm glad you like that. You was in a adult prison. I'm saying it's still the same. You still was locked up regardless.
Right.
You know, and sometimes even being at youth spreads, it's still kind of wild because you still young and you still ain't caring about that.
Right.
When I was in a youth spread, I'm seeing we having fights on the elevators and in the kitchen. You having brawls and staircases. And so it's still the same thing. It don't matter. Some people like to brag on like where they was at, but mm-hmm. it don't matter. You're still out there. You're still doing the same thing. You're still around a whole bunch of dudes, ain't going nowhere.
That's crazy. So when you 15, looking at 30 years, like, are you thinking you're about to be locked up till 45 at the time? Or did you realistically know that you would be able to get out a little bit earlier?
Not at the time, really, man. I'm telling you. Look, and this was before I really knew about the plea bargain. I knew a little bit about taking pleas, going to trial, this and that. But when I was in there, being in the county jail or the detention center, you'd rather go ahead and just tell them, give me your time and send you on the prison. It's so confined, and you're just ready to go because it kind of like can drive you crazy because you one box. Mm-hmm. Probably around 15 people every day, all day, or 20 people all day. And you just, some people sit in the county for 2 years, 3 years, waiting on trial. Sometimes you're ready to go. And even when I was 15 years old, I knew that I still had time.
Mm-hmm.
I knew time was still ahead of me. So I was like, man, I think they came to me with one plea. I think we shot that one down, but they came to me at 30. I was like, I'm ready. Let's go. Let's take it. I'm ready to go because I'm ready to go ahead and just get my time started. Cause I knew I wasn't going home. I knew I had time to do, and I was just ready to go. So that was it. I wasn't thinking about how old I was going to be, or if like was I going to do the. Now, once I got there, I thought about it like, okay, and start calculating. I was just ready to go.
And you said it wasn't until then in that time period that you really started to think about like how you were going to make a living, basically, like how you were going to find a skill, a trade, mm-hmm. and you started really paying attention then. Like, yeah. What was the light bulb moment for you where you were like, you know what, I'm going to use my time to do this?
Just basically because I knew I wasn't going to go be hanging out doing nothing in the streets when I came home. I knew that wasn't, I can't say that. Well, I guess I can't say it wasn't me, but people like to say that wasn't me or that ain't me. But sometimes I think, well, that was you at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I like, look at that was me at the time. And even being, my time was real short. I wasn't no real street dude, so I don't want to portray that. I hung around a lot of my homeboys that did way more than I did. I just was out there and got caught up in some things. I knew I wouldn't come home to be trying to be no street dude or be whatever. I knew that I wanted to be home, get home to my family, and do what I had to do to stay home. And like I said, I already knew that cutting hair, I knew I was going to cut hair and be a barber. So even say, I say like, I was 15, 16, 17. I'm already in there around the barber, watching the barber cut hair. They used to have to come to different floors and cut hair. So I already knew. And even with that, even further on in my sentence, I started, I made a post a couple of weeks ago, like, I'm in the clothes house. In the clothes house, it's just a recycle. If you're on a camp with 300 dudes, I might get your boxes the next week that you had on.
Yeah.
So I'm in there selling I worked in a couple of clothes houses. So I used to sell clothes in the clothes house. I tell people that's probably where I got my entrepreneurship started at too, because I'm selling clothes because we don't like to, for visitation, we like to have fresh clothes, or we just don't want to be washing out or having other people's clothes on. So even though it ain't no way around it, sometimes you're going to have to wear everybody's clothes.
Right.
So, but sometimes people want to buy new boxes, buy 7 pair of brand new pants just to wear on visitation or just to wear around the yard. That's the way we looked at being fresh while we was in prison, having new white, putting the clothes up on the mattress, keeping the crease, for visitation, stuff like that. I sold clothes at the clothes house. I loaned sharp for a while, a couple camps, dollar on a dollar. I give you $5, you give me $10, you give me $20. It was dollar on a dollar. And I used to have a lot of money on me. And back then you could only have $30 on you a week. But I used to have way over $30 a week, so I used to have to disperse my money out.
I would imagine, though, if you the back there with that bread, like, that draw a lot of eyes, envy, you know.
Yeah, but a lot of people were doing it, but I was cool, man. I was cool with, man, I was, like, I'm a laid-back guy, man. So I was cool with a lot of different people. I ain't really had that much. I did get in a fight my fourth month in prison. I went to hold twice, but overall, I only had two infractions, two or three. But overall, I was pretty cool.
I don't know where them.
I just found out that's a new some kind of new thing they put on this thing, man. I just found that out last night on another podcast.
Like where do balloons come from?
I don't know what it means. Yeah. I don't know what it
Yo, that's crazy. That's crazy. I don't know what. So I appreciate you just speaking about this because like how we said at the beginning, like impel, it means something. And I think in your journey, especially, that's just been the theme from the beginning. Like, gotta keep going. You saw there was a future, even at, say, arguably your lowest point at the time.
Right.
Having to be able to have that mindset, go in and even go in there and try to, like, make the best of it to some degree, right? Like you said, that entrepreneurial spirit, finding ways to do what you can while you're in there. Like you share quite a bit, but I'm just curious, like, just for you being who you are today, like what do you think is the biggest takeaway from that time served?
The biggest takeaway, a lesson learned, probably. That would probably be the biggest takeaway that I can think of that comes to mind. I have a tattoo on my arm says time wasted. No, I think it says time wasted, lesson learned, something like that. It's an hourglass with the time on there. And it just reminds me of, I guess you could say time wasted. I wasted, even now, all the things I'm doing or trying to do or been doing throughout the years, I always feel like I'm behind.
Mm.
I'm 47 years old. And people say God will put you where you're supposed to be at the right time. But I always feel like I'm behind. I guess that's my biggest takeaway from that time being wasted. I wasted a lot of time in my life just from that. We all have, even with, like you said, the impel, we all have setbacks, but we can't let that setback keep us back. On the impel forward, man, and just try to overcome things and obstacles that's been placed in your life or things you can, the bad decisions. A lot of people like to say, they call it mistakes, but I call it bad decisions. I'm man enough to say I made it. Some bad decisions, especially back then. Bad decisions, wasn't no mistakes. I knew what I was doing.
Mistake was getting caught.
Right. I knew what I was doing, and just some bad decisions in life. Well, I guess it's a lot. You can say that question you asked me: bad decisions, time wasted, lesson learned. It's a lot.
And like, and at what point, like, because 30 years, but you say you served seven and a half.
I had I was on parole for 3 years. Was at a point where I started to go back, man.
What you mean go back?
I had a parole officer, man. He was you got some people who try to help you. He want to see you do good, and then you have some who try to just be so hard. I don't know if my grandmother or my mother remember this, but this PO, man, she told me I had time to pay my restitution. I think it was restitution. It was something I had to pay. I had to pay monthly, and I was on a curfew. And she told me, don't worry about it. You got time. She was working with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she got fired or something. And then I had another one. The dude was real anal. So me and him bumped heads a lot. And I started telling him, go ahead, send me back. I'll finish out the three years, and I don't got to worry about it. I was serious, man. I was ready. I was like, look, I can go ahead and go back. I ain't got no.
Like, what, like, for those who aren't aware, like, what was it about the dynamic that really made you feel like I'd rather just go back than deal with you?
Just the pressure of him trying, because I knew that possibly he would possibly revoke me for something stupid. He wanted to put me on in some kind of drug class. I wasn't never on drugs. You smoke weed, but that was it. But that was nothing I was charged with. I didn't have no habit or nothing. He wanted to do that. And then he got on me for not paying money. I don't think I wasn't working. I was working a little bit, but it was, he just, I don't know. He was just, I guess, being strictly by the book. He might have was doing his job, but he was just real tough.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't want to. I was matching his energy, put it that way. Like, go ahead and send me back. But eventually I got switched from him. I probably had about 4 or 5 different POs. And you know, some people do violate parole just from not doing what they're supposed to do. But even when I was in there, I used to see people come back all the time, man. Just
right.
Simple stuff. I'm like, man, let me get out.
Yeah.
Let me get out.
Was there a particular reason why you were able to do the 7.5 with the 3 years of parole? Was it because of like your behavior? Was it because of overcrowding? Like was there any, did you file something to make that happen? Like,
no, they do look at that, your behavior and all that too. But back then, I was up under the old law, so the old law was, I forgot what the old law was, but they changed it to 85% in 1994. You had to do 85% of your time in 1994. But before then, you can get time cut off your sentence. So automatically, your time get cut in half. Don't ask me how they do it or whatever. But I had two two consecutive sentences. I had a 14-year sentence and a 16-year sentence.
They did it consecutive.
Yes, I had to start on. I had to do one before I did the other.
Is there a reason why it wasn't concurrent?
I do not know. They do. I don't know.
That's crazy.
It's probably something I could have got done back then if I'd have known, but I don't even know. But I had to. They always say concurrent was better than consecutive.
And yeah, because so they run at the same time.
Right, right. So I had the one where you had to do one, then start on the other.
It didn't start on. Ooh.
I had to, and then it had jobs like if you're in the kitchen, say like you work in the kitchen. Certain jobs in prison, they allow you to get game time. Like say, if you work in the kitchen, you might get 14 to 16 days off each month.
Mm.
Or if you work in the clothes house, you might get the same amount. Or in the canteen, which is the store inside the prison. Like if you working there, you might get 21 days off a whole month. And then later on, when I was on the tail end of my sentence, I was working for what they call the fence crew. And then we went around the whole state putting up fences around newly built prisons. We had inclement weather time where, like, if it snowed or it was real cold, you might get 20-something days off a month. But that helped me out a lot, too.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. They had people in prison putting up fences around new prisons in the state.
I think I did around maybe 8 prisons. I ran around putting up new fences around the whole new prison.
Wow.
Yeah.
No.
That's crazy. So, how did you feel? Because you go in at 15, fast forward 7. Like, how did you just feel leaving, coming home? Just did you go back to the same neighborhood that you left? Like, just what was that initial sort of time period for you like?
Oh, no, I knew exactly that I wasn't going back to Fayetteville. I knew I didn't want to go back to the same place. So I came to Durham Chapel Hill area.
Oh, okay.
I came straight to Durham Chapel Hill area. Had an aunt, her and my uncle, they took me in and I stayed here. I just stayed here because I knew I wasn't going back. So stayed here. I had an aunt. She had a house cleaning business. And an uncle had a plumbing business. And I worked with both of them. And working with both of them, I was able to get my first car.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't look back. I went to, I did go to Durham Tech to try to finish up my GED, but I needed a job. So I needed to keep working. I think I had stopped working with them, or it was just kind of off and on. And I did, at that one time, I did want to complete and get my GED, but later on, I was like, I need to work. I need money. That's what I did. And I didn't never, like to this day, I still don't have a high school diploma or a GED. I just kept working. I found my way through it, and now I work for. And that's another thing, man. Even coming home from prison, and a lot of people say, well, it is, I'm not going to say, it is kind of hard for people to find jobs out here or for people to hire felonies. What I like to tell people, you got to, when you go applying for a job, when you're coming home, you got to be sincere when you go in. You got to talk to these people face to face. I know everything's on the internet now, but you got to let them know that you are serious about coming home and being a changed person. That's what I did. I worked for Car Drugs Distribution Center, and I did a lot of temp jobs. I did a lot of temp jobs and Car Drugs. I was on from a temp agency, and they wanted to hire me permanent. And on the application, it was worded kind of crazy. And I took it to my aunt. I said, and I let her see it. She said, it's worded kind of different. And she said, just put no.
Gotta make sure you read it right. You gotta make sure you read it right.
I took it to the manager at the time, and he said, I said, look, I explained to him, I got a felony and this and that, this and that. And he's like, don't worry about it. He said, you're a good worker. Every place I went, I did my work, did what I needed to do. He's like, don't worry about it. So he got fired later or quit or whatever. And somehow HR found out that I had a felony. Now, I think it was because it was an article that I was in, and they were just talking about how I made a change and how I'm doing good out in the community as far as working and not getting no trouble. I think they found out about it. They called me now. Why didn't you tell us you had a felony? And I explained to him what the manager told me. He said, look, don't worry about it. He liked the way I worked, and I was good. So they eventually let me stay on. I kept working.
No way.
Even when they shut down, I was able to. That's how I got to barber school, because I really had no plan of when I was going to go to barber school or how I was going to get there. But once they shut down and moved to Henderson, they gave me a severance package. I used some of that money. also with a loan from the bank to go to barber school. But at the same time, I still went to another distribution center, North Carolina Mutual, when the barber. But then, even when working at Mutual, I had to talk to the lady then, and she was just so inspired by me. I guess you could call it selling myself to her, letting her know, look, I needed a job. I told her my background, this and that, and she hired me. She loved me.
Yeah. Word. I got a shout out to the fact that you had two relatives who had businesses that you could then like leverage as resources after coming home. Like, to me, that's something I wish we had more of from a community standpoint, like institutionally, these businesses that we create. Unfortunately, for folks that look like us, I often say, like, you make it to 22 if you don't get swept up in the system by then. Yeah. Then you're playing with like house money. You see what I'm saying? We're targeted in disproportionate ways. Even if you don't go to prison, you'll still probably have to end up going to court, getting a lawyer for something at some point. And way too often, like, the smallest infraction will then snowball into something that's like, it all started with something small, didn't have enough money to do X, Y, or Z, get the lawyer, do the follow-up, no expungement. Now you got a little second random thing less than a month later, and then stuff starts to compound relatively quick, especially when you're young and just doing stuff. We need more stuff that's owned by us so that growing up in a country, in a society that's naturally going to target folks that look like us, we need to have things on the other side of that, so that because we get targeted so much, we have some remedies to help these folks along when they get out, so that they don't just get institutionalized and fall into that cycle of just never getting out. You know what I'm saying?
And that was a big thing for me. Even when I was in, I had my family, like I said, I had great family support. So when I came home, they had, my aunt had her business and my uncle had his business. That was good for me. But like you said, everybody don't have that.
Yeah.
That was a big plus for me. And so even when me now having two barbershops, and I run across people coming home, and even if they ain't coming home or they just starting in the barber business, I'm trying to look out, doing my best.
So talk to me about barber school, because there are a lot of folks out there that definitely cut hair, have a skill set, can do it, but to say professionalize yourself, have an LLC, have a business, you got to have like a license or something you put on the wall, some kind of certificate to say you are certified. Right. What is barber school? Like, what do you have to do? How long does it take? Just what is barber school?
Well, barber school is now way more expensive than when I went. When I went in, I think it was only like $3,500. Now, don't quote me on these prices now.
For how long of a commitment?
I went for 8.5-9 months.
Okay.
That was full-time, then part-time. It was 12 months. But this is at Harris Barber College. But these other barber schools, man, it's private. You got to take out some big loans for these barber schools now.
Like, more than 10,000?
I think so. More, it's up there.
More than 20,000?
I think so. Don't quote me on the price. But it's high. It's real high. Yes, and they take, most, a lot of them taking now probably about a year and a half, 2 years. Because they are learning color and chemicals, and they learning a lot more stuff now. Now, sure, they did that back in the day, but I can't remember what their prices were. I don't know if their prices were like they are now. But
yeah, because every got to spray something in their beard these days. I don't know why this is the case, but why did we normalize this in the community? Like, what's your take on that, just as a barber? Like, why do every got to get something sprayed in his beard, everything just... what's up with that?
I give them what they want. I don't do it on everybody because everybody don't want it. But with some barbers, they have to do it. At first, I didn't do it because I didn't know how long it was gonna last on them. I ain't want to be looking good and see them out the next hour or two or the next day and it's looking crazy. So I didn't really like doing it. But a lot of people liked it. People started asking about it. I said, okay, well, I guess I gotta start doing it. They go pay for it, I'm gonna give it to them. Give them what they want. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, everybody don't want it. So I have it all. I do the spray. I used to do Beijing a lot. well, it's called vegan, really. I don't know who started calling it vegan. It's called vegan.
Hold up, y'all. I never heard that before. Everybody called it Beijing. You say it's called vegan?
Vegan. Yeah, that's what it is, vegan. And people started calling it vegan.
Yo, Everybody says Beijing is vegan. Okay, we just learned something new. All right,
that's what I pull up a box or something and look at it. But I don't know if I got a hyphen there. What you call it? What you call a little thing over the E?
Little apostrophe like sign. I don't know what accent mark, whatever we call it. Yeah.
But So I do it all, man. It's just gotta give people what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been cutting hair, been a barber for 20 years. I opened up my first barbershop 5 years after coming out of barber school. So it took me 5 years to build my clientele.
So when you in barber school, is your test the cut? Do you have to take written tests? Like, were you studying material?
How
do you earn that certificate?
You take a practical and you take a written. You have to do a little taper haircut in the back and a little mid fro. Whoever you take, their hair have to be, the model hair has to be like, I think, 3 inches or more. You have to cut it down to like a, they call it a business type haircut. Mm-hmm. You tape out the back. You have to put the razor on them, shave them with a straight razor. Then written test. I forgot how many questions or words on there or questions on there. And you just have to pass that. And you have to do it, I think, 2 times. And then after that, you get your license and you're off. But even though some people pass the test, they still don't know how to cut. So it's still just a test you get. They pass. It's just, some people say it's just about money. It's
like, really, what kind of ramifications or trouble could you get in? Like if I just want to cut hair out of my living room and have people come to the crib, do I need a license for that?
I think you do. You can get, if somebody tell them you, and they come inspecting or knocking at your door, you probably can get in trouble for that.
Really?
But most of the time, they don't, as far as barbering, they ain't going around looking for that.
Right, right.
Yeah, they got bigger things to do.
So you go through the barber school, you graduate. How long, like, was J&S your first spot? And how long did it take to get to your first spot?
That was my first spot, straight out of barber school, J&S Barbershop. Shout out to John Scott.
Shout out to John.
One of my mentors. I went straight out of barber school in 2003. Got straight there. Stayed there for 5 years. Learned all I could. And the times I wouldn't sleep. Build my clientele. Worked out. Me, John, and Mario.
Mario, yeah.
Mario Little, and I just stayed up 5 years till I built my clientele, and then Eric Carden, he was there. Me and him were together. Stayed there for 5 years, built my clientele. One day, my cousin called me. My family called me man, and she's like, "I see a building open down here." I went down there and looked at it, and then didn't look back. You know, start putting the plan together, and then it was off.
Now I remember, I'm thinking back to that time period. One, as I'm thinking back, I think Audrina, who is your cousin.
Matter of fact, that's who I stayed with when I came home from prison. That's why I got paroled to.
So it's making even more sense because I knew Audrina. We were in the same class from first through fifth grade. Same class all those years.
Okay.
And then we were just always at least cool and cordial. And I remember we were in school at Jordan and she was like, "You should..." like doing something to help promote your and as a barber. Yeah. And I was like, "What? This your cousin?" Da, da, da. And I think that was the thing that made me say, "All right, let me see what he got. Let me let him cut my hair." Because right. At that point, I was still a little like cautious. Right. And she was, and I think it was because she pitched something or not, like had a business card or something. And it made me think, "Oh, okay, let me see what Leon doing over here." Like, I'm curious, like, you already shared like what that initial phase was like, but I'm curious, it took you 5 years to build a clientele. This is the thing where I say knowing how to do something very well is one thing, right? A lot of us can do things well, whether it be cut hair, cut grass, design clothes, you name it, but finding people that will pay for what you do is different, right? Like getting a book of business, building clientele over time. Can we talk about that element? Like, what really, like, what do you think is really necessary for a young barber to do that the right way, just given your experience and what you've done in your career?
My barber instructor, Mr. Mac Tobias McLean, shout out to him. He's always talking about being consistent. Mm. And that's one of the things, you got to be consistent. Not only in your haircuts, but coming to work, being on time, showing up for your customers, all that. You just got to be consistent. If something you're really trying to do, or something you really want to do, I don't care what it is, what type of business it is, you got to be consistent in doing it and put your best foot forward and do it. And that's what it was, man. Like I said, I can't even work when I ain't had no clients. A lot of young barbers, when they first come, when they first get out of school, if it's slow, or if they cut one, two heads, they gone.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just slow or nothing, ain't nothing going on, they ain't coming to work.
Mm-hmm.
Especially new day, if there ain't nothing going on, they not staying sitting around. But like I said, I was there. Like I said, I'm asleep. I'm waiting on that next one. And nothing had come. John used to, he's going to work early on, I think it's on Saturdays. I didn't have no clientele at all. I would come to work early like him, like I had clientele. Even if I didn't, I would come to work early like I had clientele. And that's why I tell some of my barbers now, like, look, come expecting. You got to come expecting. If you showing up not expecting, you go get that. Nothing. Even if you're not going to cut, sit and watch. Help out around the shop. Sweep up. Talk. Just look. Just come expecting. So, yeah, that's what it takes, man. You got to come expecting.
Mm.
And be patient.
Like, you do that for 5 years. I remember, like, the current location. So, if you in Durham or the Triangle area, you got to know 15501 at this point. If you, especially Durham Chapel Hill, you know the term 15501. So uh-huh. We talking about 15501. Currently, we talking about where Old South Square used to be. Currently, there's a Target over there, Sam's Club, Petco, Chick-fil-A over on the side. And then there's this like shopping center on the strip, or right on the outskirt, right there along that little service road on 15501. Now, when you ride by there today, you'll clearly see at the front of that shopping center, Tobacco Road, Barber and Beauty Shop. But before that location, you were in the corner, in the cut, yeah. Like all the way in the back, What was the name of that first shop that you opened all the way in the back in the cut?
That was the name of it too.
It was Tobacco Road at the time back then.
And I named it that just because I'm a sports fan. I'm a Duke fan. Mm-hmm. And I named it Tobacco Road because of the rivalry and the history of North Carolina tobacco. Tobacco Road rivalry, Duke, Carolina. And I just named it Tobacco Road. And that's what it was in 2008 when I started it.
2008. Yeah, that. I remember being in school and then coming back over a break and you had your own shop. That I do remember. So that makes sense. 2008. Going from... When you work at somebody else's shop versus owning your own shop, like what is the, in terms of a business owner or just a entrepreneur, what does it cost you to say work at somebody else's shop versus the way you got to do things when you own your entire shop?
What do you mean? What does it cost?
Because like, so for example, like if I go to J&S, he's already got the shop. It's got the name, there's chairs there, there's lights there. Like maybe I gotta pay for some equipment, but I don't necessarily have to pay the utilities. I don't gotta pay the lease. I don't gotta pay any of those things. Mm-hmm. But I think barbers rent out chair or something else. I'm not exactly sure how the structure works. So I guess that's more so what I'm asking. Like what is that structure like when you are working at a barbershop versus when you actually own the barbershop?
It's some plus negatives and positives to both, because it's easy to put a barbershop together. If you don't get a good team in there, it's going to be a struggle for a while. Even with when I first opened up the barbershop, I was by myself for 9 months in that shop. I even lost customers because I was by myself. I was doing appointments, and even, man, back then, my clientele had got so, I had so many appointments, like people was pre-booking. Like,
right,
filled up, stayed filled up. So when people who didn't book or wanted to just walk in, I couldn't get to them.
Right.
So I lose the customers then, and I ain't had no barbers. And sometimes it's hard to find barbers, or when you do find them, they're not a good fit, or they don't come to work. It's a whole lot. But the plus is, once you do get it, they pay you booth rent, and that's how you're able to grow and scale the business, with barbers paying you booth rent. But if you ain't got no barbers, like, we all need each other. I don't care what type of business it is. I don't care if it's corporate. I don't care if it's your own business you have, your own LLC or whatever you got. We as people need each other. So if you don't got good barbers, you don't have a good team to help keep the establishment going, it's gonna fail. Like anything else, is like, because you know you work for corporate. They got you doing whatever you're doing, you and your coworkers doing. They need y'all. Y'all need them. It's basically the same thing.
Word. And like you mentioned something that made me think, because like from a barber, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but if I go to gym and gym always cut my hair, and then I walk in, these days walk-ins ain't even a thing. So I'll say that I don't even think walk-ins is a thing in the culture no more. But at a time it was. You just kind of walk in and you have to sometimes wait a couple hours before you get your cut. Like, that is how it was growing up.
We still do walk-ins, but it's mainly appointments now. But I tell people, you can walk in, just depending on when you go sit down and get your haircut.
Yeah.
Sometimes it turns out good, sometimes it don't.
I always go to gym, mm-hmm. but then Bill is just right here chilling. And I'm like, man, I just need a quick line. I just need a quick such and such. Mm-hmm. It's, from what I understand, it's not a good behavior, if you will, to just like work on somebody else's client, if you will, like you poaching clientele. So. Right. When you own the barbershop, though, from your perspective, like how you say you were starting to lose customers because the schedule was tight, and but you don't want to lose their business. Mm-hmm. How do you like delegate and say, you know what, this, maybe this client can go over here. I don't want to lose this client. Like, how do you deal with that aspect of it when you're trying to help people who are in your shop, but at the same time, everybody is entrepreneurial here, got their own book of business. Like, how do you manage that element, being a shop owner, yet like a player coach, if you will?
Well, I always try to, ever since I had my own barbershop, I always try to push people. This is what I would do. Even if I wasn't cutting or Tobacco Road, I always put myself in the back of the barbershop. Some people say the owner need to be at the front. Mm-hmm. I always put myself in the back, only because if I get new barbers in my barbershop, I want them to be the first ones that people see and speak to help them to build their clientele. I will purposely not say anything to somebody who come in the door.
Right.
Because I don't want them talking to me. I want them to talk to my new barber. I want them to have that, their first interaction.
Yeah.
Like, your chair. Even with that, I always try to feed. Even I have some customers that I've tried to give the other barbers who was growing. So that's how it works. And then sometimes people, like you say, walk in. And I've had customers that call me, or they can't get, they want to walk in and just come straight in. I'm like, look, I got somebody else who can do it. I got people now who might call me. I can't get them. I'm like, look, I got another barber who can do it. You want them to do it. So that's basically how it works. You know, some people ain't like that. A lot of people ain't like that. They try to get it all, but I've never been that tight. I'm trying to help everybody.
Word.
I like to see. Bro, man, I like to see people. It's even with booth rent, man. When I get new barbers, I give them a good leeway on far as not charging them full booth rent or booth rents for a little bit to help them, you know, get on their feet, help them get acclimated and get accustomed to getting clientele and building a little money. And then I give them a set time, and then I start charging them certain prices and keep until they are able to, or I see fit that they need to start paying full booth rent. Mm-hmm. But I'm always trying to help them out.
Word. No, man, that's dope. That's definitely dope. And like, I remember, like I said, like from, I guess was technically like day one from barber school when you ended up at JNS. Mm-hmm. And I became a client. I've only really like, I've had three barbers, I think, in my life. Like, this is what I said, like, since being an adult, I've like, since high school, when I'm in Durham, I only go to Leon. If I'm in, and I lived in Winston. When I was in Winston, shout out to Reg. Reg, if you watch it, Reggie the barber. If I was in Winston, I went to my boy Reg. And honestly, I couldn't even find like a trusted barber in random pockets. Like I did have a guy randomly on the border. He was randomly from Raleigh. So it was like the only black dude that I saw on the border, and he was from North Carolina a couple months. DC was kind of random, but I did have my guy Lionel in Amsterdam. So I really had three barbers. You, so both Leon and Lionel, which is kind of funny. But then my boy Reggie, man. And that like as a dude who at a younger age, like really prioritized those waves. Like hair was so important. Like
let me ask you this. How did you feel the first time I cut your hair? What made you start coming back?
I gotta keep it a stat, man. So and I've heard somebody else say this, but it's the truth. You take your time, it's not rushed. Mm-hmm. And like having just grown up going to different barbershops, you'd be like, oh, that only took 15 minutes, or that only took, it's like you know when you kind of been rushed out of there. And then also, right, too, like when you look in the mirror and you see the quality, you like, yeah, no, I like how I look. You know what I'm saying? Like, he don't got me looking crazy. Right. And so at the time, too, Mario had a lot of clientele. And right, I ain't like all that waiting too. So I was like, you know what? Adrena gave me the car. I'm like, you know what? Let me see what he got. Boom. And then from there, I was like, you know what? I'm straight over here. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like that honestly, that was it. But the quality of the work, one, but then the experience in the chair is the other piece to it. So when you got a good experience in the chair and you're gonna have good quality at the end of the day, why not? You know what I'm saying? Like, so,
the way your waves were spinning, boy, they was, it was hard to fade them waves in. Yeah. You used to wear the even, then you started getting the fade.
Yeah.
The fading waves, especially when they real deep, can be pretty tough.
Yo, it's also funny, too, because I'm having this conversation with you, and I would say, like, some days when I go to a barbershop, I will be zoned out. But we talked, right? Like we talked about when I was trying to get my podcast going, when you were in the early stages getting your podcast going, and like we definitely talked, but we haven't ever had a conversation. Like, I'm definitely learning more about you here in this hour and 20 minutes or so than I have in like 2000. Well, like this is 20 years basically. Like, yeah, like 20 years of having that relationship. I'm learning so much more about you here than just over a 20 year period. It's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. From a business perspective, I don't know the size pause of the one back in the corner, but the location of Tobacco Road now it's significantly bigger. Mm-hmm. More seats, more just room. How did you, that was that you were ready to like make that expansion from because you went, you spent your time, you got your clientele, and you said, I want to open up my own. Boom, open up your own. But then you do that, you grind it out, And then you end up expanding. Like, how long did you stay in that initial space before you expanded, and what made you take that route?
I stayed in that first spot was probably about 2.5. I started in 2008, moved in the front, and beginning in 2011, probably 2 years, 2.5 years, whatever. I brought on co-owner, Moses Gonzalez. He had been cutting my hair since I came to Durham.
Yeah, shout out to Mo.
I went through a couple of hairstylists in the back and a couple different barbers, and finally we had got a good team together and just outgrew that space. It was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about 6 or 7 of us, and that space was kind of small. Yeah. I mean, it was spacey in the back, but the way it was designed, it was just kind of tight.
Yeah.
And we all had clientele, so once I saw that other space was open, I was like, well, it's time to make a move. And 2011 came. That's when we moved up in there. We started talking to contracts before then. Of course, we had to get it up and running. So we had to do a lot of work in the inside too. So that took a lot. We just clientele, and all of us having clientele and that growth. And that's how I knew we was able to move up in there.
So Tobacco Road is co-owned by you and Mo?
Me and Mo co-owned Tobacco Road.
Word.
I started myself in 2008, but then I was trying to get him on for. I actually tried to get him start with me before I even did it myself, but he wasn't ready yet.
Word. So that's a dope story. And I remember, I remember opening up in the front, and then randomly you were like, I'm on the side of the building. I'm like, wait, what? Like, I'm thinking, hey, when you told me this, I'm like, oh, what happened to the shop? Like, I'm thinking something happened to the other shop. Like, but you're like, nah, I opened up another joint on the side. And I'm like, and I remember pulling up, I'm like, okay, tobacco roll still right here. Mm-hmm. Got to walk around to the side of the building to walk in here in the Impel Barber and Studio. So,
yeah.
What was the moment where you're like, you know what? I like what I got here, Tobacco Row. And now that I know that, are you the sole owner of Impel Barber and Beauty? I guess would be a question. Yeah. But at what point did you say, you know what? I like what I've set up here, but I want even more.
So I always knew I was going to open up another barbershop. I just didn't know when. Like, I never know when I'm gonna do something. It just, I guess things just kind of flow. I just take things as they kind of flow, and I just go from there. But I always knew I wanted to. Actually, I was before the pandemic. I was already looking around for different spots. I was looking in Mebane, Chapel Hill, other spots around, trying to find one. This spot came open in the same complex. I was like, well, I can just do it right here in the same complex. Yeah. Customers won't have to go too far.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do something different. And this was, I opened up Impel Barber Studio, I think it was October 2021. I just wanted to do something different, man, because as years grew and I grew, and I started learning. I'm going to tell you what I would have started, man. I started learning about stocks. Shout out to Larry Thomas. He used to always talk to me about stocks. In 2017, that's when I first started trying to learn about stocks. As I started learning about stocks, my whole mindset just started changing. I'm learning stocks, and then of course you start looking on YouTube and other things start popping up, taking down that rabbit hole. When I started doing that, man, I wanted to open up another barbershop, but do something different with the barbershop. And I wanted to inspire people to learn more. Even with me not graduating from high school or not having a GED or being quote unquote educated, I wanted to inspire people to learn more. And when I come to find out, people who've never been down the path I went down, a lot of them don't know about stocks. Even people who've
go to college and do everything
don't know. And then they do know they have a 401k, but that don't necessarily know they mean they know what stocks know about stock. And I started learning about that, and started learning about business, and started learning about LLCs, started learning about this, just everything. I was like, man, I'm gonna open up this barbershop, and what I'm gonna do is put up the books that you seen the books that I got in the barbershop: money, health, wealth, inspiring people to do just sparking that conversation. So that's what I did, and I came up with the word Impel. Well, I didn't come up with the word. I found the word. I went through a couple. I think I was just Googling words, looking up words, going down the letters. And Impel said, take action. Excuse me, trying to get over this sickness. And the drive force to urge someone to do something. And I wanted to be that driving force to urge people to take action, to just to impel forward, to grow. And that's what I took the whole Impel and made it a brand, the word Impel. Impel Ford. Of course, I got the Impel Ford podcast and Impel Barber Studio and Impel Clothing Impair I'm trying to build. I took that, man, and all I show is business podcasts or motivational podcasts, and just to get people learning and thinking different, man. What I love about it, man, people really take to it. People come down, they writing down podcasts, and some people come in, when it's not podcast, not playing, they like, what we watching today? Why you ain't watching this and this and that? And that's what I love, man. I get a lot of feedback on it. A lot of feedback. A lot of my inspiration.
Word. And when you thought about opening up the shop and you gave it that Impel name, did you know you wanted to do a podcast and create like a whole clothing brand and everything too?
Nah, so that goes back to what I was saying, man. So I just, it's just steps. Stuff start flowing. I guess it's my entrepreneurial brain, I guess. It just, once I start something, then it leads to something else. But I actually, in 2015, man, I actually had a YouTube channel, but I didn't never do anything with it. I had it up. Somebody helped me put it up, but I never did anything with it. Now, first I was going to do some old, I can be a little funny. You don't know that. But a lot of stuff written down, but I hadn't did nothing with it yet. I got a whole nother channel. And that's that one thing too, that entrepreneurial mind can have you trying to do everything at one time and you won't get nothing done.
Right.
Sometimes I got to bring myself in, like, look, trying to do too much. But I didn't know, man. I just, I think the pot. So when I started watching podcasts, and then it clicked, like, man, I had a YouTube channel this whole time. But I guess once that word impel, I took that and just really seen what it meant and what it said, and using my story, want to inspire people with the things I've been through. And if I'm able to put my foot forward and doing the things I'm doing, why can't you? We all have setbacks in some kind of aspects in life. Somewhere in life, we may be big or small, but we all have some kind of setback. Some setbacks are bigger than others. And I'm looking at me like, man, things I've been through, or what I've been through and where I'm at now, let me try to inspire people just to. I love, even with you, when you start your podcast, and like you said, we talked about it, and I'm looking at you, I'm like, man, you got, because you was like figuring out the same time with me, and I'm looking at you now, you got over 500 followers. I'm like, I love it. I'll be looking at you, I'm like, how you do this? How you do that? Even though I still ain't, because I ain't too tech savvy. That's why I bought my first laptop, because I was selling Herbalife and doing stocks. I knew, man, tech and laptops. That wasn't me. that's when I bought my first laptop, because I knew I needed to get into it and learn it. So where it impelled me, I just want to inspire people, man. So then when I started a podcast, I just told a couple of people that I knew, and they helped me with it. I got a 2 or 3 man team that helps me. Started off kind of shaky a little bit because I'm country, you know, for one. I mumble a little bit, get it talking fast, but I ain't care. That's part of that taking action.
I was going to say, man. I think that's one of the dope things about the word is, and just like piecing it together from the outside in, is that the word in itself is like a mantra. Mm-hmm. And for someone in your position, the name itself, mm-hmm, pushes you to continue to keep going. You see what I'm saying? You keep saying, take action, take action, take action. But you say it over and over and over again, eventually you're going to act. Like it starts in the mind. So just even having it coined in a way where the word itself is like, that's what it means. Right. And you're around it all the time. You're represented all the time. Like, to me, it's a constructive way to, like, I think the universe has laws, right? Mm-hmm. And I think this fits in a way where, according to universal law, it's karmically rich, because it's progressive. You said it's not reactive, it's proactive. It's about taking charge, going after it. You are what you consume. So you keep consuming that, doing that over, just gonna keep fueling you to going and going further and further. So I like that you've created this infrastructure, if you will, as it grows, will continue to help you grow. You feel what I'm saying? Because that's what the whole thing is built around, taking action and moving forward.
Right. And then even with me starting mine, man, I'm inspiring other people to want to start podcasting, man. And that's the thing. I have conversations. People ask me how to do it, what to do, what to do. I'm telling them, do this, do that, do this, do that. And that's the whole, like you said, the word impelled speaks for itself. Take action, man. And they get into it. So I have these conversations, man, in my chair a lot. I had this plumber. I was playing a podcast, Les Brown, and he hadn't ever heard of Les Brown. And he was listening to it, man. He's a white guy, man. He started crying in my chair. He started crying in my chair. Like, man, he's like, I want to do stuff on my own and this and that, but I don't know how. And he just started telling me everything, man. And I'm asking him questions and giving him advice on what to do or how to do, telling him where to get started, what he need to do first. So that's what I like to give advice. And if I can't, or if I don't know, I can point you to someone who do know, or a podcast that talks about the situation or what you're trying to do. But every podcast, everybody may give some advice, some good advice or some bad advice, but it's a step in the right direction. You can take it in and look at it yourself and get out what you need out of it. So that's what I try to do, man.
1,000%, man. And like, so can you tell people a little bit about the Impel Forward podcast and what that podcast is set out to do?
Yeah, man. It's first couple stories, man. Well, episodes is, I have a lot of people that who've been through my situations like me, who've been to prison and who've came home and doing good things in the community They started their own business. They also helping other people. And it's basically just to give, put people's stories out there and let them know that people can change. Everybody deserves a second chance. Well, most people deserve a second chance. And just to give, just to tell people stories, man. Everybody have a story. No matter how great or bad or good or whatever, everybody has a story. I just want to share with people, man. And I like to get to know people's stories myself and give other people just that time to share. And that's what I started out with. I started out with because that was where I came from prison to doing good things now. So I'm kind of doing more of talking to people who've never been to prison but don't have a business or just have a story they want to tell, who may have just some good things going on in life. And like I said, entrepreneurship mind, man, I got another idea in mind for a podcast I want to give to somebody, but I gotta figure that one out too.
word. No, we'll take that off the record just in case.
And I actually was gonna talk to you about that.
I said we'll take that off the record just in case. We won't tell everybody that. We'll take that one off the record just in case.
I just want to help people, man. One thing I want to do. I don't know if I ever told you this, but what they call it? What's that TV show? What's the Boss TV show?
Undercover Boss.
Undercover Boss. I love that show, man.
Good show. That is a good show.
I want to be that one day. I just want to be able to bless people. We all want to make money. We all want to be wealthy, but it ain't nothing like helping somebody or giving back somebody and watching them smile, making their day. So that's what I'd love to be that one day.
Word. Nah, man. Hey, if I'm being honest, bro, you don't necessarily, maybe you do, but the self-esteem get stepping up out that chair, like when you hand them that mirror and they know they was looking trash just an hour ago, and it's just like they sit in that chair and they get that mirror and they like, ooh, like you do that every day, bro. Like low yeah. key, like, especially for a black man, mm-hmm. the relationship a black man has with his barber, bro, is yeah. there. Outside of like a father, nobody else makes a man feel more confident than his barber, bro. Like in all seriousness. I think like every Nick, like most would agree. You know what I'm saying? Ain't nothing feeling like, man, I got a fresh cut. I know I look the part from that standpoint. Yeah. And you do that every day, man. So it's funny you say that's what you want to do, but that is literally what you do day over day.
Yeah, man. And I've always been humbled about that too, man, because people, they do like compliment me on that, you know, making them feel good and looking fresh. But I'm always humble about that because, you know, it's a lot of good barbers out here. But I appreciate that, man.
Of course. Hey, look. I'm loyal. Hey, I've been going from when I had hair to now I don't have hair, and I just go for my beard. Yeah. And I'm telling you, look, if you are looking for a good experience, I don't need to say this because it's well known. You've been doing your thing here in Durham now for, like we said, over 20 years. But Tobacco Road, Barber Beauty Shop, we got the Impel Studio, all off that service road, right there off 15501. All in one complex, right across from the rooms to go. It's right there off that service road. You need to check it out. Now, he can't make you look this handsome. That's just something that I got. But when it comes to the lines and everything, he'll have you looking like the best version of you. That's what I can tell you. Guaranteed. Leon, like, I appreciate the time. The openness, just the willingness to share the story. Like when it comes to the merch and the apparel, where can people find this Impel Forward gear?
I have a website that I got up. I'm getting it redone, but right now you can just go to impelforward.com or you can inbox me on Facebook at Leon Hines, or I'm on IG. You can find my Impel Forward podcast, or you can inbox me on the barber page, Impel Forward Barber Studio, Impel Barber Studio. I always got it on me. One thing I want to say about that, about this Impel, about the brand, the clothing apparel. People always ask me, do I have this color, that color, this or that? I'm just getting started, so it would take time to get all that, you know.
Hey, leave your favorite colors in the comments. Like you already see, I got the black and red. You see it. looking clean. Leon got the gray and red, even got the impale hats over there. If yeah. you got color schemes in mind, things that you think will look dope with the apparel, go ahead, leave that in the comments. Let us know. Maybe it'll be coming soon here shortly.
I do have some drops coming. I'm getting stuff together just to keep stuff going, man. So I will have different colors and stuff. I did start off with different colors, man, but as I'm learning the process and listening to other people, I'm being mentored and tell me to narrow it down.
Right.
For my colors until I start building more. So that's right. what I'm doing. And you can find me on all those platforms, Facebook, Leon Hines, Impel Forward Podcast, Impel Barber Studio. That's where I'm at.
You're giving a lot of game here, a lot of insights. Any just takeaways you hope that listeners listening, viewers watching, just any takeaways you hope that people really can leave with after listening or watching this episode?
So we did a lot of laughing, but I don't want people to take anything out of context as far as the stuff I've been through or what I said that
I laugh to keep from crying personally.
Didn't think it was a serious matter as far as the things that I did going to prison and doing time, and which is very serious. I want everybody to just put your best foot forward to be a better you and just to love people. I love people and nobody's perfect, even myself. We all make bad decisions or wrong decisions. I got something, man. Nah, I'll leave that.
Nah, let it fly. Let it fly.
I wanted to make it. Well, I still might do it anyway, but I woke up the other night with about 5 o'clock in the morning. All I heard was the wrong way, the wrong. And I kept hearing the wrong way, the wrong way. And I laid in bed, man. It was like, I don't know if I was dozing off or what. I just kept hearing it. And what I got from that is no matter where you're trying to get in life, if you take the wrong route, you still will get to your destination, but you might not get there on time. And I looked out and I was like, man, what does this mean? And basically it was telling me that I guess, like I said, I'm always thinking that I'm so far behind. And that could be for me doing things the wrong way in life.
Mm.
The best thing to do is try to do things right the first time. If you're doing things the wrong way, if you're going the wrong way in life, you may still get to your destination, but you won't get there on time. You do it right the first time, you'll get there on time and in time. So yeah, that's my word, man.
Word up. I think that's the perfect way to end this. You made it this far. Do me a favor. Hit that subscribe button. Y'all know what to do. Y'all know what to do. Don't even play me like that. Hit that subscribe button. Make sure y'all tap in. This is the G Podcast where we focus on family. Oh, hold up. My bad, Leon. Actually, I got to do this too. I got to shout out Chanel while we on here at the Impel Studio. I got to give her a shout out because it's a full circle moment for me, because when I was a youngin' coming up and I had my fro and was getting braids, Chanel was braiding my hair at Gifton's Middle School. And it's just crazy to me that now when I walk in every day to the shop, I'm looking at the person who was braiding my hair when we were young teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
With her own client base going crazy. You got kids. That's who you want. Send your kids to Chanel right now. I'm telling you right now. She the best in the whole city with kids. Like, send them over to the barbershop. But shout out to you. I've always appreciated you. I'm very happy and proud to see what you've done. Shout out to Impel as a whole. This is the G Podcast where we focus on family, friends, finances, freedom, and our future. And everything else. This is the G Podcast. Thank y'all for listening. Make sure you hit that subscribe button.
It doesn't matter how you feel. No talk back.
We are